Welcome to Mission Critical, a podcast about the big picture, the purpose, and the values that drive today's most game-changing companies, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I'm your host, Lance Chung, Editor-in-Chief of Glory Media, and I'll be introducing you to a group of brilliant minds who are making an impact on the world and forging the path ahead. While they may all be very different from each other, the question remains the same. What's your mission? Hi, David. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Lance. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing so well. I'm so excited to be chatting with you. Thank you so much for even carving out the time, because I imagine it is extremely, incredibly, very busy time for you. So I really appreciate you taking the chance to chat ahead of Paris.
Well, I mean, I think we're in the excitement business, you know, ahead of a games like this, the Paris 2024 Olympics. We have people already on the ground. I just got word that we technically registered our team, which is actually a big undertaking.
But okay, official,
we're in, 316 athletes and a mission team of nearly 900 people. So we're ready to go.
Wow. Oh my gosh. How exciting. And I mean, does it just feel like one huge, like, family trip to Paris? Like, you're taking, like, all of your cousins, your nephews, your friends and everything, and it's just like one just big caravan heading over to do some big things.
It's a great analogy, but in some ways I hope not, because my family trips are not nearly as well organized as Canada's mission to Paris, right? We've got incredibly talented people that have done this for many, many years, including hundreds of volunteers. This undertaking would make your mind blow. I mean, it's 6 years in the making. We're already planning well into for LA 28, if you can think of it in those terms.
Yeah.
You know, my family trips, 2 or 3 weeks in the making, perhaps.
Yeah, I can't imagine the amount of logistics and planning that go into planning each game. It would be completely mind-boggling for me. I definitely want to talk about Paris, but if we can just rewind a little bit, you are the CEO of the Canadian Olympic Committee, which is such a unique kind of organization to work for, I imagine. If you could just zoom out from, like, a very top level standpoint, what would you say is the primary mandate of the COC and in turn your role as the leader of the company?
I have to start by expressing sort of how grateful I am that I have this position. It really is a dream come true. For I grew up in Ottawa, a boy in Ottawa who loved sport but competed in a lot of them, but was never really good enough to compete at a high level. I was inspired by sport throughout my life, including the Olympics. The 1980 Lake Placid Olympic Games were where I sort of caught the bug, the Olympic bug. And so to fast forward over, for me, you know, I'm 53 years old, but to have this role as CEO and Secretary General of the Canadian Olympic Committee, it's a dream come true. And that, I think, bridges really nicely to what our chief responsibility is to make athletes' dreams come true. That we have hundreds of athletes who aspire to do the very best to qualify for Team Canada, to appear on the world stage at the Olympic Games, the Summer Games, and the Winter Games. And our job is principally to do everything within our power to allow them to succeed at their highest potential when they get to Games. We love doing that. I have 110 colleagues in the case of these games, over almost 900 people as part of a mission team who will do anything to help athletes achieve their dreams.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. In terms of the role that the COC plays in the community, how has that changed, if at all, over the years and over, you know, the course of how you've been involved? Have you noticed its kind of role in the community, how people are, you know, seeing the Olympic Committee or its mission and mandate change over the years and evolve?
Yeah, well, very deliberately so. We think that we don't do this just for those hundreds of athletes who happen to be part of Team Canada. we think that they're part of a broader purpose that we serve in this country, to inspire Canadians and inspire Canadian youth to participate in sport and get all that's great from participating in sport, to be better teammates, to be better leaders, to be better communicators, to learn how to win well and to learn how to lose well in many ways. And we think sport brings communities together and teaches these valuable life lessons that you can apply in so many ways. And so the way in which the Canadian Olympic Committee has evolved in my time is that we don't think we're just about helping those athletes win those medals, but that it's about a continuous effort. We like to think of it from playground to podium, to create a sports system, to create a sporting nation, and to get more people involved in a safe, inclusive, and barrier-free sports system so more youth can play and stay in sport.
Yeah, I love that. I imagine that no day is the same for someone in your role, but what are your favorite kind of days as leader of the company, at the organization?
Yeah, my favorite days tend to involve sport itself. And that doesn't have to be at the highest of levels, right? That sometimes it's seeing sport up close and personal, seeing our athletes training in their daily training environment and understanding what it takes. You know, a wonderful place that we're near to here in Toronto is the Toronto Pan Am Sports Center in Scarborough. You can go there on any given day. It's also home to the Canadian Sports Institute of Ontario. And dozens of national team athletes across a variety of sports are in there toiling, sweating, working hard, some cases overcoming injuries, in other cases talking to, you know, wellness and mental health, sports psychologists, professionals, to get them better in all that they need to get better. I love those days to understand what it takes. When I understand better what it takes, I think I can perform my role better.
Yeah, like getting down onto the ground floor and just really seeing what everyone's up to and working on.
Of course. And don't get me wrong, I have some incredible memories from the games themselves. You know, I've had the privilege of going to the Tokyo Olympics when almost no one else could because of the pandemic. And, you know, so many people think about the Paris games that are coming up as the games we've been waiting for because they will have packed stands and the venues will be iconic all across the city and in some cases the country. And yet I have these very personal memories from Tokyo, sometimes sharing a seat in an empty stadium next to Marnie McBean, the iconic Canadian Olympian. And she was at the Mission. And those memories will stick with me forever.
Amazing. You know, you bear witness to a lot of what, you know, many would call greatness. What do you think defines a great leader from what you've witnessed through your athletes as well as the people within your organization?
Well, I'll tell you, the calling card of Canadian athletes is their selflessness and their incredible sense of gratitude. You could knock me over with a feather. I think that's the expression. How many times a Canadian athlete who, I think it's fair to say most Olympians, apart from, you know, maybe the NBA players and some of the PGA golfers that now form part of our Olympic team who earn millions of dollars, majority of Canadian Olympians are what we call carded athletes earning in the ballpark of $2,000 a month to support their dreams. And so they're working at the poverty line basically in Canada. And yet when we do things for them, their incredible sense of gratitude for what we do would just blow you away. I think that's an important lesson to take with us, that when people do things for us, wherever we may be, to be grateful about it. I think that's an important leadership skill. The hard work that they put in, that's something that I think that I borrow from and then apply. We're a very hardworking organization because we see the product on the field of play and we try to equal their effort.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've kind of talked a little bit about it throughout our chat so far, but in what ways do you think sport and sports can bring Canadians together, especially during kind of major international events like the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, at its most pie in the sky level, and I am a absolute believer in this thing we call the Olympic movement. We are about to embark on a Games that brings 206 nations from around the world together, who compete in a peaceful way, you know, compete like heck against each other, but then, you know, high five, shake hands when they're done. These are in some cases nations that are at war with one another, or at least have deep divisions geopolitically. There are very few things in the world today that bring people together like that. And so I mean, at its most basic level, I'm very proud to be part of an Olympic movement that does that. I also think that, you know, within our own national stories, we all have things that trouble us. We've got lots of things to be happy about in our country, but certainly lots of things around housing and inflation and the cost of living that makes Canadians frustrated all the time. And I think Canadians are looking for something to cheer them up and inspire them and make them feel proud of country, pride in flag and the maple leaf. You know, I think we even saw it a little bit, got a glimpse into it when the Edmonton Oilers made a run for the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. We just now seen the men's soccer team go to the semifinals in Copa America.
Yeah.
We're craving this. And so, you know, my sense then is, you know, we will over the course of 17 days have 316 Canadian athletes competing for medals on behalf of this country, competing for the country. And we will have inspiring performances. We will win when we don't expect it. We might lose when we are also not expecting it. But it'll be incredible to watch, and it will bring this country together in amazing ways. I actually was out of the country during the Vancouver 2010 games. I was living in the United States at the time, but the stories people talk about among my colleagues of how those games brought this country together, that if you go back and read the headlines from the newspapers, you'd almost say, you know, hey, that was a world I don't recall, right? Like that was a Canada we've long forgotten. It's important we bring that back.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen, you know, sports being used as, or I guess, how should I frame this? How have you seen, if you have, sports being used as a divisive tool in the same way that you've seen it as a uniting tool? Like, have you seen people trying to use sport in the wrong way and try to divide a people versus, you know, the right way in terms of bringing people together? And how have your efforts really helped to kind of counteract any of that, if it's there at all?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. Sport can be, or attempts are made routinely to politicize sport. We're seeing it right now on a very grand scale, just in terms of how Russia as a nation state is responding to the measures that have been put in place restricting Russian participation in international sport. The Russians have tried to then respond by creating their own friendship games and inviting countries from around the world. Incidentally, Canada not invited. You know, they know who will be subject to this politicization of sport. And I think the way we respond to that is responsibly, that we continue to support the movements that we think are values-based. The Olympic movement has a long history, but we also try to be as consistent as we possibly can in response to these nation states or other actors that are seeking to tear, you know, the Olympic movement apart. I've seen sport do so many wonderful things in my career, bridging cultures. And bridges cultures when you show up and you play the game. And so our attitude towards that is that so much more can be achieved for good by showing up and competing than by sort of saying, no, forget it. I'm, you know, I will not compete on the field of play unless and until you do the following. So generally speaking, that's our attitude, is that in Canada, we're going to show up and compete hard, shake hands, do our best, and be good sports people when all is said and done.
Yeah. Yeah. More an emphasis on camaraderie and collaboration and healthy competition, throughout the games, and yeah, just to represent the spirit of the games as well in the international community.
For sure. And I mean, it's not just the Olympic movement. I see, yeah, sport bring communities together, you know, all across this country. I worked in women's professional tennis and I saw sport unite women from all over the globe. Women's tennis brought to places in the world where women, frankly, aren't and still aren't treated the way they should be, but powerful role models like Serena and Venus Williams, let's say, being there to show and give inspiration to young girls all around the world. I worked in the NBA, got amazing stories of, you know, Yao Ming and Dikembe Mutombo going to rural parts of Sichuan, China, and just, you know, making kids feel loved and together through the sport of basketball. I very much think that there's an incredible power of sport that can be used for good, and I'm going to continue to try to do that.
Mm-hmm. What is exciting you the most about Paris 2024?
Well, there's so much, I got to say. It starts with sport. We have, I'm not going too far out on a limb here, but I think there are several people that would agree with me. We have perhaps the strongest ever Summer Olympic team from Canada attending Paris 2024. The breadth and depth of sport, where we have real contenders, is mind-boggling. And if you want, I can go through it. I mean, it's like you look at our swimming team, for example. We have our most decorated swimmer, Penny Oleksiak, but, you know, defending gold medalist in the butterfly, Maggie McNeil, Summer McIntosh may be these Olympics' most notable performer. Josh Liendo on the men's side, Finley Knox, our men's 4x100 freestyle. Like, I could go on just in swimming. Yeah, then you turn to the track and field athletes who all will perform at a high level. Then you go to the cycling track and gymnastics and synchronized swimming and diving. Our basketball team, our basketball teams, excuse me, our men's, our women's, our 3-on-3 women's basketball teams. We're defending the gold medal in soccer, in women's soccer. We're the defending women's rowing 8, very iconic Olympic event. Mm-hmm. Schuyler Park in Taekwondo. Like, it is quite literally the most deep and broad Summer Olympic team I think we've ever fielded. And I can't wait to go sort of try to manage my schedule to see how many of these competitions, we'll excel at.
And some exciting new sporting categories that, some Canadians are generating a lot of buzz around too. Like that, I think it will be super interesting to watch, just, you know, people like Philip Kim, like, I'm so curious to see how that's going to go.
Well, I mean, Phil is so. First of all, the number one ranked b-boy in the sport of breaking, I believe, in the world at the moment, the defending Pan Am Games gold medalist, and so therefore has as legitimate a chance as anyone does, and a wonderful ambassador for Canada and the sport. I've had the pleasure of spending a little bit of time with him, and he's just, you know, a great human on top of everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's what defines Team Canada, is you can go through and find, you know, hundreds of Phil Kims that are great humans, that are contributing back in their communities, that will, upon their return from Paris, do things to inspire the next generation of athletes. We got a 14-year-old skateboarder, Faye DeFazio Ebert. Like, so you prompted me to keep naming names and going through sports, but yeah, the new sports are exciting. And I think that's a nice way to tap into, a younger generation of Olympic fans. You know, I talk about 1980 being a spark for me, or even 84, the LA Summer Games being a spark for me. It's important that these sparks happen.
Yeah, I believe.
And that somebody in my seat 50 years from now will talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Talk about Paris 2024.
Yes.
You know, we've talked about equity and access to opportunity kind of here and there in our chat. How does the COC work to really ensure that athletes from diverse backgrounds and communities and, you know, resource levels have the opportunity to really succeed on an international stage?
Yeah, we are working in a variety of ways to do this. But I'd argue that this is a journey, not a destination for us, that while we're getting better at our vision, our grand vision is that the Canadian Olympic team needs to look like Canada. And I think it's fair to say that it's looking more and more like Canada, but it's not there yet. And so through grants, so we have things called OLE grants, where a number of, in many cases, retired athletes, but Olympians are creating programs to get more diversity into the sports system, both in the athlete and the coaching ranks. We also work on programs through the grace of our Canadian Olympic Foundation, where donors have given a lot of money to the Canadian Olympic Foundation to allow us to get more diversity into Canadian sport and to put specific programs all across the country, in some cases Indigenous focused programs, and in some cases people of color focused programs. All of this is important. All of this has a real push at the top from the IOC through IOC's Solidarity Network, which the IOC also encourages countries like Canada, because we can, to be an important part of the IOC refugee program. So Canada supports the largest number of refugee athletes in the Americas. So athletes from other countries who work and train with our athletes here in Canada and then can tell their stories in a very inspiring way to this whole country. It means a lot to us. As does gender parity. I'd be remiss if I didn't, you know, mention that Paris will be the first games with complete official gender parity. So the exact same number of men and women will compete in the exact same number of events. It was close before in Tokyo, but it wasn't 50-50. Funnily enough, we've now long had, I can't remember what the streak is exactly, but suffice it to say, it's been several games where we've brought more Canadian women to the Olympic Games than we brought men. And in the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games, 75% of our medals were won by women. So we've got a rich history of women kicking butt.
yeah, trailblazers in the category, in the conversation, I should say. That's super. I mean, that was such a great piece of news to come out of this year's, you know, road leading up to Paris, and the fact that it is the first time, and I guess in Olympic history, where there's full gender parity being achieved.
Yep, and I gotta say, I don't know that the IOC does enough to publicize things of that nature. It takes some flack here and there. But it has been itself a leader in this space, really working hard. We've been now attending games where this might seem just a symbol, but I think it's an important symbol, where we're required not just to announce a flag bearer, but countries around the world appoint a male and female flag bearer. And in some countries, that's not as easy as it is in Canada. We've got so many amazing candidates to choose from in our country, and other countries, they start asking themselves why. And we think that's an important conversation to open up all around the world.
It's the bigger picture conversation around it.
Exactly right. And so I'll give the IOC credit for having those conversations, for setting these standards and making it happen, which I think is really important, an important aspect of these Paris 2024 games.
Yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, Canada has been a leader in really championing and celebrating women in sport. How do you think, you know, achieving gender parity in Paris will have an impact or kind of a trickle down effect in terms of young women athletes in Canada and kind of the ecosystem and culture around supporting young women, young talent for women?
Yeah, it seems to me that it happens in sort of waves and stages, right? That you have these moments and then you have movements, and people who've been involved in women's sport for some time will tell you, okay, you can trace back, let's say, our success in women's hockey to a moment in Nagano, that then you could trace forward to 2024 and the birth of the Professional Women's Hockey League and the commercialization of women's professional hockey and all that happened, the acclaim, the packed arenas, both in Montreal and Toronto and in the United States. And I think that what you should expect is that Paris could have the same impact in other spaces and places. Summer McIntosh will almost certainly inspire a young generation of, I don't even think it's just girls, I think it's boys too, that will be inspired by Summer in the pool.
Yeah.
Will want to get into the pool and swim and know that they can do anything, that they can be a powerhouse in whatever discipline they want to tackle. That's why I think sport can be so powerful, that it's like, okay, it's sending us a message that she's this incredible swimmer, but it's an empowerment. It's an inspiration that you can kind of set a goal and have a dream and achieve it. Because I bet you that's what Summer's going to talk about when she gets asked, coming from a sporting family. It'll be things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you know, you've talked to and met so many athletes, incredible athletes that are competing in the Olympics, but also former Olympians as well. What advice, based off of, you know, all the conversations that you've had, what advice do you have for young athletes who really aspire to compete at the highest level there is in sports? You know, I'm sure that people ask you for your advice on that, but like, what's like, if you could distill it down to a single piece of advice, what would that be?
Well, I mean, I can only repeat what some of Canada's greatest athletes tell me. But you're right. I get to interact with them all the time. I spent so much time with Marnie McBean. Mark Tewksbury is our vice president of our board and somebody that I've spent an incredible amount of time with, and a trailblazer in his own right, a Canadian icon. Rosie McLennan, three-time Olympic medalist, two-time gold medalist, chair of our athletes commission. Bruni Surin is our chef de mission in Paris. One of the common threads they'd all say is, you know, have fun.
Yeah.
That's a hard message, I think, for an athlete in the moment who's toiling with, you know, six times a week practices in whatever discipline they're in or whatever it might be, to sort of, it's like, you're telling me to have fun. My muscles hurt. My mind is overwhelmed. I just got whacked in whatever competition I just did. I'm not feeling so great. You're telling me to have fun. But it is the perspective that so many of our nation's greatest athletes say is important, to have fun. I would also add, and perhaps this is my bias because I never became a great athlete, but do your very best and know that the skills that you're acquiring and that you're developing will suit you so well in whatever chapter of your life you next take on, right? That,
yeah.
For me, I feel like the lessons I learned in sport are things that I apply to this day. And how to communicate better, how to be a better leader, how to be a better teammate. Like, there's almost nothing you can do in this world anymore that you're not a teammate. I'm a teammate with my spouse in raising our children. I'm a teammate with my colleagues here at the COC in our mandate to, you know, deliver teams to the Olympic Games. And so, you know, I feel like that would be my other message, would be that, you know, take hold of those skills you're developing and have the knowledge that it's going to serve you well.
Yeah, because we've seen so many athletes go on to become politicians, public servants, media personalities, entrepreneurs, best-selling authors and everything. And it really does, it really is like an amalgamation of all the skills that they've learned and also just kind of performing in front of the world and just a lot of transferable skills, we'll say.
100%, like Adam Vancouverden,
yeah,
our canoe kayak champion and flag bearer, also a Canadian icon, quite notoriously now a member of parliament for Milton, 2 or 3 times elected to that position. So very successful politician. And then there are sort of less notorious cases where tucked away in somebody's resume, I guarantee you, you know, among the business leaders of this country, you'll notice, oh, wow, they rowed for their university rowing team or something like that. You'll see it on a lot of people's resumes that the sport has this developmental capability that serves people very, very well.
Yeah, yeah. Just quickly, as we're wrapping up here, if we take the shift away from athletes for now and also talk about the people who are just working in the industry of sport and the business of sport, what advice do you have for those individuals who are also very passionate about making an impact in the world of sport and how that kind of brings people together?
Yeah, well, I'd encourage them to pursue it. That's sort of how I got my start in my career, I always loved sport. I then went to law school and became a lawyer and practiced law, but I had this thing gnawing away at me in the back of my mind that it was sort of saying, you know, you've got these great clients, you've got a great career, but it's not all fulfilling you in the way you want to have it fulfilled. And it wasn't until I figured out how to get involved in sport professionally that I started to feel like I was on the right track for me personally and professionally at the same time. And now it allows me, you know, I think this is now 25 years later or so, to have great passion for what I do. And I think it's really important to find that space in your career where you have a spring in your step when you go to work. It's natural that I would, that we're just a couple of weeks away from the opening ceremony of Paris 2024. So I got a little bit to be happy about, but I have a spring in my step virtually every day of the year, 365 days a year, even in non-Olympic years, because I feel like I'm doing something that I believe in and that I want to be doing. And so to those who non-athletes who want to work in sport, I'd encourage them to follow that passion. It's a great place to be.
Yeah. Last question, and something that we always ask everyone, you know, our podcast focuses on mission and purpose, and we've kind of talked about this, you know, throughout our conversation, but at the end of the day, what would you say is your personal mission? What's the thing that's like getting you out of the day or out of your bed, giving you that extra spring in your step and really just kind of driving the decisions you make throughout the day?
Yeah, I've had a little bit of time to reflect on this one because we have a corporate mission to transform Canada through the power of sport. And that speaks to me. My personal mission, as I've reflected on what I've done in my career in sport, in women's professional tennis, in the NBA, and in basketball, and now here at the Canadian Olympic Committee, is I think I've sought to enrich lives through sport and use sport as this incredible tool it can be, and then try to encourage others with whom I work to enrich lives through sport. I feel like that gives back tremendously to me. So I derive great energy from that, but I also feel like it can impact lives in a very positive way when I do that. So I'm going to continue to do it. As I said, I think sport brings people together like nothing else. I think it teaches these incredibly valuable life lessons. So in a way, as much as, you know, I'm working my darndest to get Phil Wizard to win, you know, the gold medal in breaking in Paris, my purpose drives me to get, you know, even if it's one more Canadian child interested in sport, participating in sport, overcoming barriers to get involved in sport, breaking down problems with access to sport, that really gets me going. And that's the real focus for me on a personal level.
I love that. That is such a wonderful way to kind of wrap up our chat and just kind of bring everything together. And I think it's been, it's just really, really moving to see the stories that are coming out of Canada, the way that it brings people together. I mean, we've seen it very recently with, you know, Team Canada for Copa, as well as the Oilers. And we've seen so many examples of people being coming together. So I think it's very exciting. And I really appreciate the time during what is a very, very busy time for you to chat today. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you, Lance. It's my pleasure. Go Canada, go.
Go Canada. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you liked, who you'd like to see on the show, and anything else you want to share. To keep up to date, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Until next time, ask yourself, what's your mission?